From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Y. I'm Annette John Hall.
And I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
It's been more than 6 months since a bombshell grand jury report in Pennsylvania revealed that 300 predator priests had abused more than 1,000 minors in 6 Roman Catholic dioceses statewide.
The pattern was abuse, deny, and cover up.
One priest in the Diocese of Harrisburg allegedly abused 5 sisters in a single family. Another in the Diocese of Greensburg is said to have impregnated a 17-year-old girl, married her, and the
local church has never seen anything like this. So the impact of this is ricocheting not just around the state, but around American Catholicism and even beyond already.
Last week, Pope Francis called together some of the world's bishops for a 4-day summit at the Vatican to talk about how to tackle clergy sex abuse within the Catholic Church.
Lawrence Persico, bishop of the Diocese of Erie in northwestern Pennsylvania, has been outspoken about the sexual abuse scandals that have rocked the church. Persico was ahead of the curve, releasing the names of abusive priests before the Pennsylvania grand jury report came out. But after the Vatican meeting, even Persico is taking a wait-and-see approach.
All of which has frustrated critics and abuse survivors who see the Vatican summit as just more of the same. After all the revelations and high-level meetings, why is the church so slow to change? Today on The Why, one bishop's conscience.
And Bishop Persico, can you hear us well?
Yes, I'm okay. You're fine. I can hear you.
Great.
We talked to Bishop Persico during a remote hookup from his office in Erie.
Bishop Persico, last April, you released the names of the priests in the Erie diocese who had abused.
The list, which made headlines before we even released it, is different than what other dioceses have released, in that it includes 34 priests.
And then in August, the grand jury report comes out, and it's a scathing indictment from the state chronicling decades of abuse. And you were really held up at that point as a model for transparency. What were your interactions like at that point with priests and bishops?
Some thought it was a very good idea. Others didn't think it was such a good idea. But I felt that I had to do what was right according to my conscience. I thought the best was to inform the general public, and then they could be on guard.
So last weekend, Pope Francis held a Vatican summit, and he called for an all-out battle against the abuse of minors. But people were upset there wasn't more of a plan of action. Some people, including you, wanted him to take direct action against bishops who cover up abuse. But the Pope really didn't propose that. Were you satisfied with the outcome here?
The outcome, probably in the eyes of many, could have been more concrete. I will admit that. But on the other hand, you're dealing with a universal church. And you have to have everyone on the same page in understanding the seriousness of it. My expectation is after this conference and the feedback that they received and listening to the speakers, I'm sure the Holy Father, at least I hope the Holy Father, will issue directives on certain aspects that he once dealt with. And I hope it will be on dealing with bishops who abuse and cover up.
Survivors were already skeptical coming into this summit. Here's Mike McDonald with the Survivors Network of those abused by priests.
We're asking the bishops a number of things. Do I think we're going to get it? No. I think this is a dog and pony show in Rome.
Do they have any reason for hope now?
Well, first of all, Annette, you know, Mike is a victim. And he has a right to be very angry. I mean, look at all the years we kicked this can down the road. So unless there would have been things, and I don't know what they would have been, that would have made them satisfied with the meeting. But they're just angry, and it just, in their mind, and the way they see this, that this is just additional delay. So I can understand their anger.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe if I was in the same situation, my view would be different. I would be angry too and frustrated.
I also want to bring up, you know, Catholic families who are not necessarily victims of abuse. We're going to hear from Chuck Gessing. He's a former Catholic school teacher, and he's left the church as a result of what has come out.
How can I leave the church when the place that changed my life for the better is part of the Catholic Church? And the way I make peace with it is I'm not abandoning my faith. I'm going to a different church to prevent the human bad part of that church machine not to have access to my kids.
So from where you sit as a, you know, a spiritual leader, how do you balance winning back the hearts of Catholics who are disillusioned with the church with taking action, you know, to prevent abuse in the future?
Well, I think two things. One, that's understandable the way he feels. And secondly, you know, since 2002, the number of abuse cases have been down. The other point is that if you look at the grand jury report, many of the cases were 30, 40, or 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Now, yeah. I'm not saying that everything is perfect, no, because we still have some areas to work on and develop better policies and procedures. We're not done yet. It's going to take time. We're not done yet. The way that we can demonstrate to those Catholics who may have left the church that we are serious is by what we do and what policies and procedures we implement.
You know, Bishop, we don't need to tell you the church has been heavily criticized for its handling of abuse claims. And, you know, we mentioned that you have been held up as a model for how to deal with it. But, you know, we have to say there have even been complaints about how the Erie Diocese, and it's mostly your predecessor, but there have been some complaints about how you have handled abuse claims. And we're going to hear now from James Faluzak, who is a former priest who himself was abused as a teenager.
Bishop Persico became bishop in 2012, and he waited 6 years to release that list. If he was all about transparency, why didn't he release the list in 2012?
First off, I'd like to give you a chance to respond to that statement. But also, why do you think this change is just so difficult for the church?
As I was telling you about how I arrived at the decision to publish names, you have to realize that it was an evolution for me, too.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I arrived here, it was the policy not to release names. My home diocese didn't release names, and at that time, I was comfortable about it.
Right.
It was only once I got here, and that example that I gave you, as well as receiving phone calls from victims who had come forward before, but spoke to me about the way they were treated, that I began to see we needed to move forward by releasing names. So, you know, Jim Faluzak has his opinion of his criticism, and that's fine. That's what he believes in. But, you know, the day I arrived here, I didn't have a clear direction on deciding to release names, reviewing every file the diocese possessed. I was trying to figure out where the light switches were.
Right.
Well, what I can see now in hindsight was all of that covering up and hiding, it came back to bite us because it just made it worse. That was the wrong move to make.
Well, given that, I mean, when you look at a conference like the one that happened this past weekend, is it a little bit disheartening to see not quite the level of change that you wanted?
Well, yeah, I do. But also, I think the Pope had to have something like this to get the message across that the cover-up is over, start moving forward, and have procedures and policies that deal with abusive priests, deacons, and also bishops and their cover-up.
So, Bishop, I'm sure that parishioners are going to want to hear a word from their priests in their parishes on Sunday. Have you advised your priests what to talk about in terms of the Vatican Summit and how to talk about this issue with parishioners on Sunday?
At this time, I have not, because I don't think there's enough information. I would prefer waiting to see what starts to develop here in the United States so we have something concrete to tell them.
Bishop Persico, I want to say thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Bishop.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
The Y is produced by me, Annette John Hall, along with Shai Ben-Yaakov and Alex Stern, with editorial direction from Katie Colinari. We had additional editing help on this episode from Kevin McCory.
Our interns are Xavier Lopez and Julian Harris.
Our engineers are Mike Villers, Al Banks, and Charlie Kyer.
The news director is Eugene Sahn. John Mussoni is assistant vice president of news operations, and Sandra Clark is vice president of news and civic dialogue.
Ish Quintero composed our theme music. Subscribe to the podcast and leave a review.
Reach out on Twitter at Shai Ben-Yaakov, at Annette J.H., and at Alex Ray Stern.
We'll be back Monday.